Welcome back to the Almost Forgotten Podcast, the Black American History Lecture Series, brought to you in part by your host, Professor Darryl Brad King Jr. here, and it is my privilege and honor to be back with each and every one of you for part three in this Black History Lecture Series. This is just a phenomenal and great time to be with each and every one of you as we walk through this journey of Black American history and what that means and the essence of that. You can feel free to listen to the lecture series on our podcast, which is located on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you can find podcasts to be found anywhere throughout the planet. This podcast is based on my very book, The Almost Forgotten, America's First Black American Congressman, The Reconstruction Period, and the Dawn of the Black Political Age. And it's just an honor and a privilege to be able to author such a book and to present great materials to each and every one of you on this journey through Black history. If you'd like to support us in our endeavors, you can feel free to get the book on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Again, the title is The Almost Forgotten, America's First Black American Congressman, The Reconstruction Era and the Black Political Age. Again, this highlights the first Black American congressman post the Civil War and the Reconstruction Era. And it highlights the unnamed, the unnoticed, the unrecognized throughout history. You would not have heard these names in your K through 12 history class unless your educator went above and beyond to ensure that these names were known. Again, now, before we get started, I want to encourage each and every one of you to please go back and check out episodes 1 and 2. We're going to keep building on the foundational knowledge based on episodes 1 and 2. If you are at this point and you have not seen episodes 1 and 2, you must go back in order to have a full understanding of where we've been and where we're going, which honestly has a much more bigger impact even in our world today. We must know where we've been in order to know where we are going. So again, please go back to episodes 1 and 2 and ensure that you are able to catch up and to learn the foundational knowledge of the information that we'll be presenting today. And you are on Brad King TV. And again, your host, Professor Darryl Brad King Jr. I've already talked about my academic and training credentials in episode 1. You can feel free to go back there and to ensure that I'm delivering this information based on the knowledge that I am still very much paying for in student loans. So rest assured, I know what I'm talking about here. In addition to that, this is about my heritage as well. The Black American History Lecture Series. I'm an adjunct professor of sociology, history, politics, and religion. Feel free to follow us at Brad King TV and email us at management@djbjmotivationalmedia.com. It is absolutely vital that we jump right into this great part 3 of the series. Many of you have reached out and have been just really enamored by the work that we've gone over so far. We have just beginning. This is going to take a while. I already told you all, technically, this is a year-long course. But somehow, we're going to comprehensively try to get an overview of many things within a short period of time. As we conduct this lecture series, it is vitally important that we show the entire history of Black America before enslavement. And I want to ensure that we make that and highlight this course is going through the late 1400s all the way through the 1900s. Here's the facts. We have some, I would like to address and give a disclaimer at this point about why we're doing this and address a few individuals who really must be addressed in order to clarify the reason for the series. There are many individuals who are questioning why Black history matters. I encourage you, please go back to episode 1, where we do a great comprehensive review on why Black History matters, why it's even a subject matter. The truth is, there's a phrase called systematic racism. If it had not been for the system that had been set up throughout American and European society based on systematic racism, there wouldn't have to be a conversation about singling out a group and their history that has really gone unwritten, unnoticed, and overlooked for way too long, in particular in our K-12 classrooms, and even sometimes within our collegiate level. Black history is an elective course. It's not a required course, and it's simply not fully incorporated in American history. American history is often delivered from the construct and context of a Eurocentric conversation, and it often overlooks many subordinate groups within a dominant culture that raises the construct of whiteness. And again, I'm not going to go over the definition of what I mean by that. Go back to episode 1. But for simple clarity, when we're talking about the construct of whiteness, we're talking about the system, not necessarily the skin color, as one would be talking about if I was talking about white supremacy, which is about racism and raising the construct of being white based on one's color skin as being better and othering everyone else. So that we have to clarify what we mean by these terms and these words. But again, go back to episode 1 to better get a characterization and understanding of the constructs and the perspectives around that. For further details, again, please go back to episode 1 and 2 in order to get the greatest detail and information. This is not my race and ethnic studies course, so I'm not able to go into great detail about a lot of things. So you're going to have to do your own work in terms of building that foundational knowledge and seeking that out. All right, let's jump right in. Again, I told you all in parts 1 and 2 that I'm going to be rather laid back and try to deliver this information as best as I can from the perspective of one whose culture this is, as well as one who has studied this greatly in terms of the context of my family and my journey and my ancestry journey, which I will go into throughout this lecture series at some point as well. And I'll talk to you about my history and the things that I found out through the scientific creations of DNA testing. So here we go. In our next section, concerning African kingdoms and the resistance and the creation of strategy. The African kingdoms' resistance and the creation of strategy. This is often taking folks off guard when we talk about the context of African societies actually having the construct and the systems in place to create strategy. The strategies of these countries and these leaders and these tribes absolutely led the creation and the strategic moves that each and every one of them had. I need each and every one of you to be aware. If, again, systematic racism based on a racialized construct of one skin tone broke out worldwide, it impacted many places and locations throughout the world. And let me be even more abundantly clearer. Africans resisted every step of the way. I know the story hasn't been told the right way, but Africans absolutely resisted every step of the way. We need to reconstruct the conversation about resistance to the colonization and the enforcement of systematic racism based on a racialized context due to the skin color and the skin hue of one's personhood. I just want you to take that in. Take a moment to realize that the personhood of these individuals were on the line. Their lives were based on the dollar. So when we talk about the phrase of Black Lives Mattering, this is the context and the construct from which such a phrase comes from. The personhood of an individual being stolen, the original victims of identity theft based on the transatlantic slave trade. No African went into slavery willingly under this racialized context. Now, you may be asking yourself, why am I making such a focus on this? And it is because of the pervasive stereotypes that are very much present in our society concerning Black Americans. And they do stem from these moments, these divisions, the stereotypes that have been pervading for hundreds of years, stems back to this idea and this notion that Africans didn't resist. And that's just absolutely untrue. I don't speak about this out of theory. I speak about this out of direct experience. It's even within the colonial context of the Africans themselves who seem to not know the history of individuals who were kidnapped and identities being stolen. That even when they come into the American context from modern day African contexts and countries, there is really a tension between the African American community and the African community. Because Africans can trace their lineage, of their continuity of lineage, if their ancestors were not captured. Unlike African Americans, who are unable to do that because of identity theft and kidnapping and the stripping of one's identity. And that these tensions even persist today. I have personal stories and direct stories myself concerning these tensions. And I seek to try to bridge conversations of clarity and reconciliation that needs to occur. Because as I mentioned in part two, there were some Africans that indeed were a part of this process. I do believe that many of them may not have realized the torturous, the indefinite servitude portion of this enslavement, but there is a tension around this conversation, even within African and African-American cultures. This series isn't about hiding from the truth. This is real talk. So I realize I'm stepping on some really tensionous territory. So feel free to take a moment, take a breath, take a step back. That's why this is on YouTube. You can take a break and come back to think and reflect about the tensions that we presently experience, even in modern day times. Within the African kingdoms, there were indeed resistors. There was strategies developed in order to ensure that slavery ended and that the end of the transatlantic slave trade begun. I want to take some time today to name some names. Within African culture and African American culture, names mean something. And the names of individuals who have gone unnoticed and have stories untold. I want to name some names today. I want to name some kingdoms. I want to name some tribes. And I want to name some individuals over the next few lectures to highlight the resistance and the creative strategies that were developed by African leaders under some tough circumstances. I want to name some names. The first African kingdom that I want to name today is the Ashanti Empire. They actively resisted, and they are in present-day Ghana under the colonial driven lines, and they fought several wars against the British forces to maintain their independence and to discourage slave raiding. Then there's the Dahomey, who are now Benin, who actively engaged and resisted later on against European colonialism and the slave trade. Unfortunately, there were some individuals who were actively engaged in the capture and the sale of slaves in the early years because they did not know the type of enslavement that was being presented during this time period. And then there is the Oyo Empire, which is in present-day Nigeria. They resisted the expansion of the slave trade into their territory, and they also sought to maintain control over their population. And then there were African societies and kingdoms and locations and leaders that realized they didn't have the numbers to combat the European troops, and they truly didn't have the weaponry and the advanced technology that the Europeans had during this time. So they had to be clever. They had to create a strategy, one that may have even offered diplomacy by way of resisting, but unfortunately, not being able to save everyone, okay? So this is the tension we have to work with here, that there was indeed created strategies. No one wanted their own people to be stolen off of their lands and taken away and families turned and torn apart. That no African kingdom truly wanted that. But under the old ancient rules of warfare, if there were intertribal issues, there was the real consistency of the ancient way of enslavement versus the race-based new form of the transatlantic slave trade, of which many had no idea what one's fate would come to in the end. But I want to name some African kingdoms and societies that created strategies against slavery, although they may not have been totally successful the entire time. The Songhai Empire. They had policies aimed at preventing the enslavement of its own citizens and sought to protect its subjects from the transatlantic slave trade. This was unique because they were absolutely eliminating slavery altogether. So if you end even the ancient form of slavery, there won't be a confusion about what is happening within the modern version of this race-based enslavement. This was quite unique during this time period. Then there was the Borno Empire, also located in present-day Nigeria. And they attempted to limit the slave trade by implementing regulations, and they began to start charging a tax on the trade of enslavement. So they were actually taking a point out of the European playbook in terms of taxation. And if you raise the taxes, one doesn't want to actually have to pay a tax in order to get the services done. So this was meant to be a strategic deterrent. Then there was the Kanem-Bornu Empire, also present-day Nigeria, who continued to place controls and limits of the slave trade within the territory, although there was still an active force happening with enslavement. Now, also in Nigeria are a group of people named the Igbo. The Igbo society are within the southern eastern Nigeria, and they had a decentralized system that made it difficult for external slave raiders to capture large numbers of individuals. And then you'll find that there were various African leaders on the continent and throughout this entire time period that actively sought a strategic way to end the enslavement of their people and of the people of the continent thereafter. Now, we will highlight a few kingdoms and review certain individuals who made an understanding of a strategic development and a planning process on how to address the transatlantic slave trade, as well as governing their kingdoms within this time period. It is often very fascinating to see this work happens. Now, I already told you, it would take me an entire year to comprehensively go through each kingdom and society, but I want to assign some homework. Hey, this is the first homework assignment coming up. I want you to go over and review those empires and locations that we named today. Research them more. Now that you have this information, you've been equipped to research and to find out more information about the stories of these locations. Learn some names and some individuals and tell your community. All right. Now we're going to review a few kingdoms today, such as the Kingdom of the Congo, Matamba, and Anango. These three kingdoms, one of them created outside of the structures within the African borders. We will understand these historical dynamics and get an understanding of the initial contacts made with the Portuguese. And remember, we talked about them and that papal decree that was given to them in order to continue the advancement of the transatlantic slave trade. As I mentioned before, the Portuguese explorers ventured southward towards Africa in the late 15th century, and they encountered the existence of the Kingdom of Congo, of which they reestablished under their own colonial rule a little later on, under some deception, which we'll go over. The initial contacts were marked by diplomatic exchanges and even trade relations. So there's a bit of a bait and switch that's occurring here, setting the stage for a more profound and complex relationship. However, as Portugal sought to meet the growing demands for the enslaved labor force within the Americas, that's North and South America, which we will talk about in this series as well, the transatlantic slave trade emerges, and the Kingdom of the Congo became entangled in this trade. It had significant consequences, folks. So much so that in 1491, there was a treaty entitled the Treaty of Congo that established the Kingdom of Congo and Portugal as trading partners. Now, this treaty outlined terms and agreements that began to shape their diplomatic, economic, and ultimately, it became an exploitative relationship during this time period. Now, I realize when we're talking about these trade agreements, we have to kind of reflect on the European engagement on indigenous populations, even in the Americas, in their approach. Yes, there's one side that's saying it's an agreement, but then on the other side, they're being forced to the table. Okay? And mostly due to advanced technology that they did not have access to before. And one thing I just want to highlight here before we continue is that Africa was rich of natural resources Africa had led the evolutionary stages surrounding the use of raw materials and minerals and metals for millions of years. Okay? The metals were sourced, gold, the precious silver, copper. They were all sourced from the African continent at some point over the years and remade into advanced technology that most Africans did not have access to during this time period. So we just need to be clear about one thing. The guns is what we're really talking about, were created by the materials of the resources of the African continent itself. But they did not have access to the advanced weaponry and design, and even the Industrial Revolution that's setting the stage and beginning during this time. They just simply didn't have access to that technology. So I don't want people to think and continue to carry the notion that the Europeans were somehow smarter than the Africans themselves. It's just the advancement of the industry in terms of the usage of materials began to expedite a little faster in Europe than it did on the African continent. It didn't mean they didn't have weapons. They just didn't have access to guns early on. Eventually they would, and eventually that's how they were able, in some instances, to run out the European colonists, some longer than others, right? Eventually they get a hold of this weaponry, which still has great impact on the African continent in many ways, and not so good ways, all right? So the natural resources came from Africa. Do not be deceived by that. So these early trade agreements are actually what's fueling the development of the technology and the use of this material, in particular in Portugal. The natural resources was the first part of this agreement. The second part of the agreement was concerning Christian conversion through the missionaries. Now, I told you, I believe in part one and part two, that Christianity had been in existence on this continent for an extremely long time, earlier than even the European countries that are coming in trying to colonize the African continent. So how could it be that a location that is very familiar with the Christian religion, which may have been expressed through African cultural norms, have to be subjected to this new Christianity? This is where a little theology and some religion kind of drops in here. Okay? The perspective of the Portuguese and the form of Christianity that's being brought to this African continent is one that has already been blessed by the means of a decree based on a racialized and even dehumanizing the existing religious context and culture that already is present in Africa. This is the point in which I personally believe, this is not history, this is just my personal opinion, folks, this particular part. This is the introduction of a Christianity that is not the viewpoint of the original Christianity that was established by African fathers of the early church within the Christian context. This is not a Bible study. But if it were, I'd be planting a flag here in terms of the type of Christianity that supports enslavement and racism and gendering and a fight against men and being more powerful than women. And I can go on and on. All right. So that's part two of the agreement. There must be Christian conversions, because according to that papal decree by Nicholas V, if they become a Christian, they should be saved from enslavement. But it turns out that will not be the case. There will be plenty of Africans who had long converted that are brought to the shores of the Americas. And we will actually highlight where many of these Christian Africans end up on the American continent. The next part of the agreement has to do with education. And the education of the people. So it's meant to be negotiated by the leadership, of whom we'll review, that if you're going to go through and utilize the trails and so on to go deep into the African continent, which is why I'm showing this map, they would go through the port of Congo to go deeper into Africa to enslave those tribes and individuals, but they would not impact the citizens of the Kingdom of Congo. Long term, this deal doesn't work out so well, and there are some wars that are fought because of it. Now, this individual highlights the next section, for which we will review on next time. But I do want to introduce him now, because he plays a pivotal role in where we're going. His name is Paulo Dias de Nabal. And then we will talk a little bit more about Pope Nicholas V and Portugal in the plot against the Kingdom of Congo. First, the Portuguese decided to plot against the Kingdom of Congo for the purposes of eventual enslavement. So quite frankly, they were just delaying the time. And Paulo here ends up staying with the Congolese for 5 years to study them at the request of King Nungando. Paulo requests to go back eventually to Portugal to return for more information and to prepare an army to come back and conquer the neighboring tribes. What ends up happening is 10 years later, Paulo brings local African mercenaries to fight against the local king that he originally negotiated this trade agreement with. So this is the beginning of a much more detailed tale that's going to come up. And I'm going to hold that for part four of this Black History lecture series, which has been going so well. Here's what I need you to do. I need each and every one of you to like, share, and even provide feedback by emailing us at management@djbjmotivationalmedia.com. You can message us on all of our social media platforms at Brackeen TV, or you can message me directly at Daryl Brackeen Jr. on any social media platform that you may find my name or information. This has been a great check-in of part three, and the beginning of the next part is we will review the role of Portugal and its leaders as it begins to deceive the Kingdom of Congo. And then we will also highlight some of the leaders of the surrounding location that began to launch the resistance, the African resistance, against the enslavement of its people. This is Professor Daryl Brackeen Jr., with the Almost Forgotten podcast, highlighting our Black American History Lecture Series. Be sure to follow us on all platforms at Brackeen TV, and we will see you next time.